the shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to Morning Tide on the Sharks Audio Network.
Star! Fabian Zetterlund on a one-time pass. Cooks the defense, has a chance. Deke shoots, Deke shoots, Star! A spectacular rush from end to end.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
They're Scheifele moving it back into the right circle, and Winnipeg is starting to change players now. Ehlers is on the ice, shoots, save made, rebound, score! Mark Scheifele at the end of his shift took the rebound of that shot by Ehlers and bangs it in for the winner. Time of it, 1 minute, 33 seconds of overtime, and a heartbreaking defeat for the San Jose Sharks tonight. The final score in overtime, Winnipeg 2, the Sharks 1. The Jets sweep the season series in three straight games, and the Sharks another valiant effort, but 1 point short of their goal.
Yeah, I think we, played how we wanted to play. Got to give a lot of credit to our group. Worked extremely hard each and every period that, with things that we talked about this morning. And, to fall short is a kick in the gut. So I'm disappointed we don't get the result, but I'm really extremely proud of our group. Back to back, getting late last night to have that type of effort against, arguably the best team in the league. Give a lot of credit to the group.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? The San Jose Sharks falling short after, like you heard from head coach Ryan Warsowski, a valiant effort in Winnipeg. Two games into this season-long seven-game road trip, they have lost 2 one-goal games. You like the way they've played in both these games, but man, if it doesn't bring along a whole lot of frustration with it, because now they are at a point where they have lost 26 as defined by the NHL as close losses, which means one goal or one goal plus an empty netter. And for San Jose, that means that if you win 10 of those games, if you put 10 more points on their season, that puts them at 58 points, which means they would only be 5 points back of the final wild card spot. If you win half of those games, you give them 26 points. They are in a wild card spot today. And that is the hardest part about figuring out the San Jose Sharks, is that from the outside, you look at the record, you look at everything that is defined by wins and losses and goal differential, and you see a team that's not that good. But when you're up close to it, like we are, and we're following this team game in, game out, ultimately the San Jose Sharks are going to be defined by all these close losses when we look back at the 2024-2025 season, because they seemingly lose every single one. The close losses are just over and over and over and over. And as I've said before, hopefully the change from this year to next is not that they turn into a world beater, not that they turn into a complete team that is suddenly contending for Stanley Cups, but that in half of these quote-unquote close games, they figure out how to win them. They figure out how to get more offense. They figure out how to give themselves more of a buffer. They figure out how to manage the games and manage the overall, flow that's going to come at them. And I think a huge part of that is talent disparity, and that comes with a huge reality check. I look at what Winnipeg is out there on the ice, not just in overtime, but over the entirety of the game, and they are a much better team than the San Jose Sharks are. And that's not supposed to be some sort of an insult. There's a reason for this. They're 41-14-3. They've won 10 games in a row. That doesn't happen by accident. They are a complete, extremely talented team. They have the best goalie in the world, and they figure out ways to win, which is exactly what they did against San Jose last night. San Jose does not figure out ways to win. San Jose does not have the best netminder in the world, although last night, Vitek Vanacek played absolutely out of his mind. But if you go into a situation against the hottest team in the league, arguably the best team in the league, and you only score one goal and you don't get any more than that, you are literally giving the best team in the world right now a chance to beat you until the very last second. You're up by 2 goals, you've got that buffer. But with just a 1-goal lead, you had 19:33 gone by in the third, 27 seconds between you and 2 points. That 27 seconds was too much. You gave them to the last possible moment, and they tied it. And then when you get to overtime, it just did not lead to the results that the Sharks wanted. Sure, the Sharks got a point out of it, but that's not what you want. You want wins in this league. And that was a very frustrating, disappointing finish. And that's where you have to, kind of harmonize reality overall. The Sharks are a very plucky, hard-nosed, talented team, but they are not there yet. And I use "there" in quotes because we know what a team that looks like they are there looks like. It's what the Sharks used to be. It's what Winnipeg is right now. It's what Vegas is right now. It's what Edmonton is right now. Colorado right now. Dallas. Ottawa right now. Detroit right now. Washington. Toronto. Florida. Tampa. These teams all have what it takes to compete. And just because I didn't name your second favorite team in the league beyond the Sharks on that list doesn't mean I've forgotten about them. I'm just going at random some of the teams that are in a playoff spot right now. But you look at the other longest streak in the NHL right now, it's not exactly long. There's a couple of 2 or 3 game winning streaks right now. You look at teams that have been good over the last 10, Anaheim, as they've thrust themselves right back into the picture. Dallas has been really good. They've got a 3-game win streak. But Winnipeg is 10-0-0 in their last 10, and they found a way to win last night. The Sharks don't know how to find ways to win. We get to the overtime period, and a lot of people had various qualms about the three that were put out there for San Jose. In my mind, I think Ryan Warsowski is thinking, A, Alex Wennberg has had a little bit of clutch to him throughout the entire game. He also had a good game overall. Not a bad guy to put out there. He can win you the draw as well, and I think that's not a bad decision in the slightest. Colin Graf had a phenomenal game up to that point. He'd been really good defensively. He'd been really good on the offensive side, creating opportunities. He felt probably that he was due. Mario Ferraro had also played with the heart of a warrior throughout this game. He'd had a phenomenal game defensively, and I think he probably felt that they were going to put out their best out there. If you could stop that first wave from Winnipeg, then you were going to give yourself a very good chance. The issue was that San Jose could never get a change. And when that happens against some of the best in the world that are on that Winnipeg team, you put yourself in a difficult situation. And I understand the thinking that Warzo was going for, at least in my interpretation, and we'll get his answer a little bit later. And I know that he did talk post-game about how good Wennberg was throughout the entirety of the game. But, you know, the Sharks, it was going to be difficult in any situation. You go back to the game against Edmonton. When they have the talent to put out there, it's going to be very difficult to beat them in a 3-on-3 situation, or, you know, a game against Pittsburgh earlier this year, or any of the other, you know, overtime losses we talk about. The Sharks are usually at a talent deficit, and I could make an argument of that for a lot of teams, even when you are putting out young up-and-coming stars like Macklin Celebrini or William Eklund or, you know, Will Smith or any of these guys. Just because we come back to that refrain of the Sharks not being quote unquote there yet. That is a stark reality that we constantly come back to. At the end of the day, the Sharks, in terms of their development, in terms of where they are not the same talent-wise as where a lot of these other teams are. And I think that comes beyond any coaching decision, any tactic, X and O's. It comes down to the Jims and Joes, right? Like, that's the old expression. And if you don't have the guys, you're not going to find yourself with a win when all is said and done. And I don't think that this is some sort of, you know, crazy, contentious, wild debate that's to be had. I think San Jose had a good reason to go out there and put some guys on the ice. And then beyond that, they were going to be in a talent deficit in every single way. So, you know, you look at this game, you say that you're frustrated with the loss, of which I totally understand. But now for a second straight game on the other side of the break, you're looking at a Sharks team that is not as talented as they were even a few weeks ago, now that they've traded Mikhail Granlund and Cody Ceci. You also go back to the trade they made earlier this year of a Mackenzie Blackwood. They don't have the horses. They're not as talented overall. The young players are getting better, and even consistent veterans like Tyler Toffoli, it seems like he's getting sharper and, you know, more refined in his game as we get deeper into this year. Those guys are performing, and the entire team is fighting hard. They just don't have as much to go up against the opposition. You look at these last two games and you wonder, if you do have Mikhail Granlund and Cody Ceci in these games, how the result may have been different. You look back at a number of these close losses and think that, you know, maybe Mackenzie Blackwood's able to make one more big save than their performance they've had in some of these close games. And I don't know for sure, but it is something to think about. And hopefully it's something we don't have to think about too much longer. I would like to believe that the Sharks are going to be able to take steps in the near future to make themselves a much better team. I don't know if that's this offseason or the one after this, but you see how close they are, right? Like, I'm not the only one that looks at this team and thinks they're close. They're not that far off. They have the ability to take strides towards the future, but they don't have the ability to do so right now. And it takes time. I think we could probably go back, you know, a couple of years ago and look where Colorado was and think to ourselves, man, you know, they don't have the ability to win these close games. I think you go back to where Tampa was before they were contending. You go back in time with a lot of these teams and you see a lot of tight losses, because learning how to be a team of that nature in the NHL does take time. It's not easy. It's not simple. It takes a certain time frame to develop players, to develop mentality. And honestly, that's the hardest part about what the Sharks have been doing in recent memory, is with all these good performances, you do like the effort. You like what they're trying to do out there. You like the defensive commitment. You like the way they're contesting pucks. I mean, Colin Graf, all throughout that game, was using his body, was using his speed, was using his overall ability to make stops against a team that's much better than the Sharks, with much more experienced, high-caliber players. Colin Graf was showing growth in front of our eyes. I liked the way that Shakir Mukhmudulin was playing throughout the game. I liked a lot of the things that we were seeing from San Jose. I liked the penalty kill from San Jose. They had some great performances. We liked what we saw in terms of the Sharks when they had their power play. That's how they scored the goal. We saw things that we liked throughout the game. It just didn't yield the result that we were wanting to see, because the Sharks don't have the talent to go toe-to-toe. And talent at the end of the day is going to find you the results. I can remember similar situations for the Sharks where they were down late. They get a face-off win late, score, tie it up, go into overtime and win it. They crushed teams. When you are good, you crush teams' hopes. You crush their overall ability to win a game because you have more talent. The more chances you give a good team to get back into a game, the more chance you are going to lose, because those good teams have that mentality that a game is not over until it is over. There's always going to be an opportunity, and the talent is going to find a way, even beyond the X's and O's, even beyond the effort, beyond anything else. Talent finds a way to win. Go back to Four Nations. Connor McDavid, you know, they were outplayed in that third period and in the overtime. Connor McDavid, however, is the best player arguably in the history of the game. And when the puck found his stick open in the slot at the end, he went high on Connor Hellebuyck, put it past. That's the best in the world. Maybe the best the game has ever seen, finding a way to win. His talent won the game at the end of the day. Didn't matter that Canada had been outplayed. Didn't matter that USA had been giving themselves greater opportunities. The best in the world found a way to win it. In that game last night, it didn't matter that San Jose had found a way to outplay Winnipeg throughout the game. We go back to the game against Calgary. It didn't matter that San Jose had outplayed that team. In both of these instances, the greater level of cumulative talent found a way to win. And I don't know how to give you much more of an explanation than that. The Sharks did nothing wrong and still came up with the wrong answer. That's the flaw of sports. You can do everything right and still not yield the result you're looking for. I can talk about the entire tenure of Doug Wilson when people talk about the Sharks not being able to win a Stanley Cup final over all those years of contending teams. The acquisitions that Doug made, the players he brought in. He made the big moves. He did everything he could to make the team better in every single instance, whether it was an acquisition of an Evander Kane in that timeline that made the Sharks better, of a Gus Nyquist, of a Brent Burns, of a Dan Boyle. You look at all these big moves. Joe Thornton, they made the Sharks better. It didn't yield the right result. Did Doug Wilson do something specifically wrong? No. You look at Billy Beane in the A's, all the moves that he made. He brought in high-level talents. You know, you go back to 2014, he brings in Jeff Samardzija. It wasn't the deadline, it was the 4th of July weekend. You know, he didn't think it was going to be enough, so he goes and makes trades later in the year, and the A's still fall short. Were those, quote-unquote, the wrong moves? Yeah, maybe with 5 years hindsight, you can question some of them, but at the time, you were trying to find something to give your team a spark. You go back to other previous moves that he made. Even right now, you make the comparison with the Warriors and their acquisition of Jimmy Butler. If that doesn't yield them a title this year, is that, quote-unquote, the wrong move? Well, it's made them better in the short term. Is that the wrong move as they try to find a way to make something happen out of this year to extend or maximize the window that they're in? Yeah. You can make the right decisions. It doesn't mean it's going to yield the result that you're looking for. And that's where the Sharks are at this point in time. All right, I want to get into some of the highlights and some post-game sound. I've also got some of an interview that I did yesterday with Alan Hoshida of NBC Sports California, where we talked about what's happening next in San Jose's timeline and some of the things they need to work on. You want to hear the first part of the interview, you can just listen to yesterday's edition of The Buildup. But for this one, I'm going to give you the second half of the interview, or the later stages of the interview, as he and I talked about a number of topics. But like I said, let's go over some of the highlights and get into some post-game sound after that. It was William Eklund, assisted by Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini, who gave the Sharks a 1-0 lead.
Celebrini now with a misdirection, gives it back to Eklund, takes a return feed, back to Will Smith, back to Celebrini. Sharks throwing it around smartly as Celebrini goes to Eklund for a shot. Score! Spectacular puck movement by the Sharks, and they score a 4-on-3 power play goal courtesy of William Eklund. They've got a 1-0 lead with 4:53 to go in the first period.
And that was all the offense we would get until there were about 27 seconds left in the game, or slightly less than that if you go by the tenths. But both Vitek Vanacek and Connor Hellebuck made absolutely phenomenal saves. Vitek just over and over and over came up with the big, big stops.
DeMello tipped it back to the middle. Here's Scheifele, checked by Celebrini as he moves down the boards. Into the zone, centering feed, Connor goes to the backhand. What a save by goaltender Vanacek as he came out. It wasn't orthodox, but he got his body on that as Connor went to the backhand to try to jam it in. And wow, what a save by Vanacek.
And Connor Hellebuck did his best as well.
Macklin getting back defensively. Does a great job to glove one down. Legal hand pass in the defensive zone. And the Sharks break out. Down the left side, Toffoli to Eklund. Shoots it. Save. Rebound. Oh, what a save by Hellebuck. It was off of Tyler Toffoli. Oh, my goodness. What a save that was. And he makes another stop off of Eklund as the puck tips out of play. But that is one of the saves of the ages right there as Tyler Toffoli had that thing buried.
I also loved Tyler Toffoli's expression after that because he just had a kind of a WTF, how on earth did that get stopped? But the saves these two guys were making back and forth. Vitek Vanacek says, all right, you make a save, I'll make another one in return.
Now it's Cunning behind the goal line. Uh-oh, shovels it over to the far side, giving away, fed in front. Lowry, the one-time shot, and oh, what a save by goaltender Vanacek with 5:36 to play. That's the save of the game right there.
And Vanacek deserved better. I mean, that's my only takeaway here is that he deserved more offensive support. The Sharks, hopefully in another year or two, we'll be able to add on two or three to that 1-0 lead to give their goalie the win, to give him the opportunity to walk away with 2 points when all is said and done. That's not where the Sharks are right now. And with time winding down, wave after wave after wave from Winnipeg was able to break through.
Now here comes Winnipeg on the move to the Sharks line. It's Scheifele skating in. Vlasic forces him to the outside angle play by Ehlers is off the outside of the goal. They shoot, they score. Well, Morrissey gets the rebound of that shot. Ehlers put it off the outside of the goal and it ricocheted back to the point. And Josh Morrissey, freshly back from the Four Nations tournament, slaps it home. There was a man in front in Scheifele who was causing some chaos with 25.9 seconds to play in regulation. It's tied up at one.
And then we go overtime.
There's Scheifele moving it back into the right circle, and Winnipeg is starting to change players now. Ehlers is on the ice. Shoots. Save made. Rebound. Score! Mark Scheifele at the end of his shift took the rebound of that shot by Ehlers and bangs it in for the winner. Time of it, 1 minute, 33 seconds of overtime, and a heartbreaking defeat for the San Jose Sharks tonight. The final score in overtime, Winnipeg 2, the Sharks 1. The Jets sweep the season series in 3 straight games, and the Sharks another valiant effort, but 1 point short of their goal.
A great effort from San Jose, but they fall short. In many ways, that is an encapsulation of what we have seen so far this year, which, although it is not satisfying right now, does make me believe there are good things coming in the future.
Yeah, you know, I liked our 6-on-5 when the goalie pulled. Up until when the goal was scored, you know, we have a chance to probably put a little bit deeper in the zone for them to break out a puck. We don't, and we give some really talented players some time and space through the neutral zone. They switch sides, which they're really good at, and then Morrissey obviously hits a shot with some from layered screen there. So, you know, something we got to work on in going forward. But you know, that's what kind of happens when they have, you know, 6 guys on the ice and we have 5. So, some things we can do better in those areas.
I think that effort against a lot of teams that aren't Winnipeg or Edmonton or any of these high-caliber teams are probably going to give you a better chance of winning, but the Sharks don't want to be just better than other teams. They want to be better than the best, and last night was an example of how far they have to go and also of how far they have come so far this year. You know, you go back to that first game on the second night of a back-to-back against Winnipeg, and they lost 8-3. This time, they were right there with them the entire game. Unfortunately, they just couldn't find their 2 points when all was said and done.
Yeah, my heart breaks for the group, really, to be honest with you. to play that hard against one of the best teams in the league, be 20 seconds away, whatever it was. It stinks. It hurts. But that's life. This is some adversity that we've gone through. This has been a challenging year for everyone in the organization, really. And the only thing we can do is just keep slugging away, keep going at it, keep getting better every day we get a chance. Every time we have an opportunity to win a hockey game, we got to play towards our identity. But we got to keep pushing forward.
And he was asked about his trio that he put out in overtime, and I can't argue with his answer.
Did you watch Wimberg tonight? I thought he was one of our best players. Really good in the faceoff dot, good percentage. Wins the faceoff to start. We get the possession and gets a really great A chance. So that was the biggest thing.
Again, if we pull back from 1 year ago and get big picture, the Sharks were getting blown out left and right. This year, they're in close losses. Far too many of them, obviously, 26 leading the league. If they win half of those next year, they are going to be in the playoff picture. I think that is the hope going forward. They don't need to be contenders. They don't need to be world beaters, but they need to make good on more of these close games. All right. As I was saying earlier, I did speak with Alan Hoshida yesterday of NBC Sports California. We continue that conversation, and my point being to Alan that the Sharks need a little bit more middle finger in their game.
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, you don't get placed on back-to-backs with the Winnipeg Jets twice in a year. Probably when you win a little bit more games, the NHL has a little bit more awareness to what they're doing.
Or on Halloween night, election night, New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I mean, or that. But I think you're spot on. I think, and going back to the Four Nations and Brady Tkachuk, like, if anything, if you're watching that, that brand of hockey is not dead. And yes, it gets amplified in the playoffs right. And when games are on the line, but they do that all the time. The Tkachuks do that all the time. And I've been telling you all week, they need a power forward. They need Ryan Klo to, you know, Benjamin Button himself and get strap him back on and put him out there. And like, I even asked Klo in our sit down, is that something that the Sharks would like to have a power forward like that? And he's like, well, yeah, of course. Everyone team wants it. The problem is, there's not a whole lot that could be in your top six and do that, right? Like, there's a lot of guys that can, you know, bang, and but they're not top six talent like the Tkachuks, or, and he brought up Tom Wilson when I talked to him. But I think you're spot on. I think you need that. And then to your point with the rest, you have to reward the Sharks for doing it. Like, Dellandre goes and lays a hit and then gets punched in the face and then he gets a penalty. Like, you got to watch the game and understand that that's also to your point, is that like the Sharks aren't getting that call because they're like, oh, the Sharks are doing this right now? Ah, that doesn't seem right. And it has to seem right. And I think also with all those teams that were really good from the San Jose Sharks through, I don't know, 20-year run, there was always F you to their game. There was always someone that was going to be ready to run. Scott Parker, Brian Marchment, whoever it was, Ryan Klo, like, Mark Smith, maybe, you know, they always had someone who was going to do that dirty work, and you knew that they weren't going to get pushed away. Yeah, yes, you also had huge bodies in Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Danny Heatley,
Brett Burns,
Douglas Murray, like, but you had Douglas Murray in the back end. You had Kyle McLaren on the back end, who was going to lay a huge hit that was just going to remind everyone, if you're running down the half boards, don't cross me like that. I'm going to put my big old booty into you, and it's going to end. Like, they need that. They need guys that are going to lay to make people play. Like, even as something as I think Drew was talking about it on the game telecast on one of the Flames goals. Jack Thompson stopped and scooted back instead of just keep going to the guy and put the guy into the boards and ending that play. Like, you just have to be more physical. And I know the NHL isn't as physical of a game as it was, but I don't know if that's because of it's frowned. Like, fighting is more frowned upon, yes, but I think guys are just shying away from hitting. I just don't – they're trying to save their bodies a little bit more.
Every clean hit turns into a fight, and Drew is probably – tired of talking about it, but like, you have to allow guys to hit. But to your point about Jack Thompson on that play where he didn't close out, I think he was also with the young guys, and I've seen this over the last couple of years with San Jose. I think they worry about committing and then getting caught out if it goes the other direction, or if it's in their own zone. And I think that's part of the hesitation with the young guys, where they have to learn, like, you know what, I've got cover if I go sell out and finish my check here.
Yeah, and you have to know who's on the ice, right? Like, he had Macklin pumping back. Like, he's going to be there. Macklin's going to be there as your center coming back for support. And that's just knowing who's on the ice and stuff. But, yeah, I just think especially – and, you know, the open ice hits, they're not going to be in the game as much. But, like, along the boards, finish your checks. Finish guys. Like, make them feel you. Make them know that they're going to get hit every time they're on the puck on that boards that you're coming.
The way you play.
Yeah. And if you take some penalties for that, I think Ryan Wersowski is going to be more accepting of those than your stick penalties, where you're reaching, where you're not moving your feet, you're not skating, where you are just slashing guys, hitting them on the hands. Those are the penalties that coaches get the most upset about. If it's about effort and you're going through a guy and you get called for roughing because the NHL is a softer game than it was 10 years ago, I don't know if that's a bad thing.
No, if you're going to go to the box, make it hurt for the opposition, literally. Like, make sure that somebody out there is...
But don't injure them.
No, not injure them, but like, make it sting. Make it hurt. Yeah, make it not comfortable. Earn those minutes in the box, I guess. I'm not advocating injuring anyone. I'm just saying, if you're going to go to the box, I'd rather see it because you hit somebody as opposed to some ticky-tack hold or reach. You know, it's like, come on.
Like Eklund, if he's leaving the game for the last 2:45, what's 45 seconds? Might as well get my money's worth and let him know how I feel. I'm going to go get a shower early.
And Wersowski said after the game that he didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why would you? That's you being frustrated. A little bit is that he missed the puck on the one-timer that came through. Like, he's frustrated by himself because he missed that. And then also, it was a slash. It was a slash.
Yeah, but for sure.
2:45 left in the clock, maybe you're hoping that the ref decides, hey, let's let these guys figure it out themselves. I don't know if it changed the dynamic of that play. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just being a homer. But, like, unless it's a 2-on-1 and you clip the guy's skates and then it's changing, then maybe, yeah, got to call it. I don't know. I always am on the side that, like, in the final 3 minutes, let's see what these guys have.
Yeah, no, I agree. Nico Sturm, deadline.
Yeah.
Is he here in a couple of weeks or do you think he's gone?
Well, I think it's just, Nico Sturm has had some comments out there that he doesn't believe he'd be here past the deadline also, but not rude, super respectful. He said he's going to play for the Crest as long as they tell him not to. So he's fully in where he is. He's where his feet are, but he doesn't think that. I just think at some point, depending on what's out there, you can't make too many trades. Like, you can't have 75% of your roster be first, second year players or CUDA guys. Like, you just can't do that. Because then you're asking who's showing up to the games for the final, and they have a month. They're basically at home for a month.
Yeah, all of March.
After the deadline. And if it's all guys that you're like, okay, I know they're not going to be as competitive, then how are you going to show up for those games? So I think there's a line, like a fine line of how many guys you could trade, how many forwards can you trade, how many defenders can you trade before it gets to being just a mixed bag and you're just fielding a team that just isn't going to be able, to no one's credit, they're first year, second year players still learning what it means to be a pro, just can't compete with the teams they're going to be asked to compete with. In the last 2 weeks of the season, we looked at it, it's all playoff teams.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go up against all these teams fighting for playoffs and you have guys that just aren't at the experience level, the skill level, whatever it may be, I don't know if you make the product or if you add any momentum to next season, right? Like, if you're losing, if you go and lose 20 out of 25 games here, do you build anything for next year at that point? Like, so I don't know if he's going to be here because I think he's a great asset. Nico Sturm's won a Stanley Cup with Colorado. He's a great faceoff guy, penalty kill guys, all attributes you want in someone you're going to make a deep run. But I just would say with the caveat, it really depends on how many trades have already been made and what you're looking at. Jan Ruda's out right now. Kovalenko's out right now. So they're already missing guys.
Liljegren's out for tonight.
But with that said, if they're getting back an NHL player too with them or a young guy that, you know, they think, that's something else too. Like, if you're Nico Sturm and you're getting another body back, but if you're just collecting draft picks and capital, which is important, but that doesn't, those aren't real people at this time. Those are concepts, and you need real humans that play hockey.
To hear the entirety of that conversation, check out yesterday's edition of The Build Up. All right, we're out of time for the San Jose Sharks. I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.